start here. As you all know, our title today is The Coach's Agenda. And
wait a second, Art. Did you say the coach has an agenda?
The coach actually has an agenda. Yes, contrary to popular belief and perhaps misperception that has grown out there. And, you know, when we talk about the coach holds the client's agenda, well, I don't think we always really meant that that means the coach does not have an agenda. Actually, we believe the coach has a powerful agenda. So we really want to talk about that. And today there's been a lot of conversation kind of behind the scenes at CTI. You know, we've been around now for a long time. There are thousands and thousands of coactive coaches around the world working in organizations. Part of where this came from really was stepping back a bit to take stock of the question, who are we as coactive coaches, really? Like, what sets us apart? And a desire to begin, really to begin a bigger conversation with you all as the community of coactive coaches, and to keep a kind of, to begin and keep a, to foster a conversation with you about what really does distinguish coactive coaches, and specifically in the context of bringing transformation to organizations.
So there you see the next two bullet points are the question, who are you? And there's two of the things that we know you are as a coach. And we are going to encourage and foster that conversation in this call.
Right, because there are, you know, really every, today we have this focus specifically creating transformation in organizations. And really, as coactive coaches, we're about creating transformative learning and change anywhere. But many of us do work in organizations, and organizations can present the coactive coach with some specific challenges in terms of being these things, being change agents or holding really a commitment to transformation. So these are some of the things we're going to talk about, including holding the big A agenda for your client, engaging the whole person, particularly when you're working with senior leaders in organizations, and some thoughts that we have about what some of the keys are for the coach in holding a powerful agenda in organizations. So that's a little bit of a roadmap of what we're going to talk about and where we're going today.
And like Art said, for those of you that are joining in later, if you have any questions during this this webinar, which is a unique expression for CTI to have the two leaders in front of the room where everyone is on mute. So you're not actually totally on mute. You have a little question box, and you can ask what questions you want down there, and we have a very high-powered, magical question answerer who will feed us the questions when she feels it's appropriate.
Henry, I want to also invite people, although this is, you know, the webinar format is, it's so different than, you know, when we're with people live in the classroom. On the other hand, I want to invite people to really be present with us on the call and to, like, as we go through, to think about your clients and think about who you are as coactive coach in the organizations that you work with. Like, put yourself there and bring to mind, not just actually to mind, bring to heart what it's like for you and
right.
What the challenges are and what it means for you to really stand in the place of a powerful coactive coach creating transformation in these settings so that you're, you know, go on the journey a bit with us.
We see this call and the other two calls that are following it as conversation beginners, paradigm shifters. We want you to go out. We want you to leave this. Why we're here is we want you to leave this call excited about the conversation and wanting to expand the conversation into organizations, into all your communities, into the network of coaches around you. So we want to convert you into evangelists of this paradigm shift.
And my hope is that many of you, I believe many of you are signed up for the series of webinars here. And in addition to the webinar series, we'll have information at the end also on the conversation to continue this conversation on the Coactive Network. And Henry and I and others will engage in that conversation as well. So, I'd love for us to hold it as kind of a bigger process that we're launching here. So with that, welcome, and let's move forward.
Next slide, please.
Oh, my God.
Look at
no
that.
No agenda.
The one of the big myths that somehow got started out of our coaching world, out of the Coactive Coaching world, is that the coach doesn't have an agenda, that the coach is invisible. And what we want to do is we want to bust this myth wide open. We want to actually declare that absolutely the coach has an agenda, the coach has a stake. A coactive coach is committed to something for their client that even their client doesn't know about a lot of the time.
We work, we work hard in the, particularly in the beginning of the coactive coaching curriculum. It begins in fundamentals, and then in the intermediate curriculum, fulfillment, balance, and process, we really continue on this track of reinforcing that the coach, what does it mean for the coach to really hold the client's agenda? And our intent has always been to create a bit of unlearning, because we're all, and boy, this is, I think, especially true, Henry, in organizations where, what's true all over the place, but in organizations, you go through the ranks, and what makes you successful often is your expertise, your ability to problem solve, your ability to have the answers, your ability to really be a consultant. And part of where the whole, this design approach came from was the recognition that to become powerful coaches, people need to be able to put aside, kind of unlearn, being the problem solver or pushing their own agenda or all of that. So we work hard in the curriculum to really build the muscle of holding the client's agenda, and I think we do a great job of that.
Can I ask something too, Art, about that before you move on to the however? There's a thing about ego, too, that is about, I think we've gotten very attached to, in most of the world, and especially in the organizational world, our egos, our survival, actually depends on those opinions and judgments. And so separating them from ourselves and finding a core identity of a listener, of someone who can truly get over there into the other person's shoes and listen to what's going on for them is really an important step in establishing a powerful coach. And
that,
so that's
absolutely
what we do. And that's what we do at the beginning of the courses. The problem is that people then think that that's all a coach is someone who sort of is invisible and is there to sort of go wherever the client leads them, and that's a myth. That's the myth we want to bust.
Yeah, and I think, along with being a myth, sometimes, and I'm going to exaggerate here a little bit, but it has fueled sometimes a perception or, I don't know, sometimes I hear people say, oh, the coach seems sort of, like agendaless, or that it's soft, or it's almost sort of invisible, or something like that. And I always think, no, that's not right. That's not how I experience it. Actually, this coach stands really, really firm.
Right.
Another thing, Henry, what you just said makes me think of is, and part of the context I want to set for folks here on the webinar is to think about, and again, it's true anywhere, but particularly in organizations, I believe, and my experience has been, that there are a lot of pressures that are very seductive to me to fall prey to my own saboteurs. And in terms of an agenda, it's the saboteur of wanting to look good or to have the answers or to, to be brilliant. And the higher up in the organization my client is, the more pressure I sometimes feel to really have a brilliant agenda or something or to have the answers. And so that's just something that, I think it's a trap. And part of what we're talking about in this webinar and the webinar series are, as coaches, how do you recognize the saboteurs that are most present for you in organizations, and how do you get out from under one, get out from under them to have a powerful agenda and yet still be the good sort of listener holding your client's agenda?
Absolutely.
Great. So one of the things that, well, one of the places where we stand firmly is that coactive coaches are change agents in human consciousness.
So what I love about this picture and this phrase is that I'm imagining that a lot of people think the job of the coach is to get that hiker ready to climb that mountain. In other words, to know what to pack in his backpack, to solve the problems of how much muscles he needs and all kinds of stuff, and to do the doing of climbing the mountain. And I think what we are really a change agents in, what we're really looking at, is how do we get that guy to, once he gets up the mountain, up to the top there, how do we get him to see out as to it, to see what it is that has shifted and changed in his life, in his experience, in his world, and to be ready for that and to be open for that and to actually have him and his whole being open for that shift in consciousness, in awareness.
Right. It's all too easy to use grand words like human consciousness or like transformation, or like, they get used, I think, too often and start to lose meaning. And so we want to be really clear about what do we mean by this? Because that's to say coactive coaches are change agents in human consciousness. Now, I don't know if I'm going to put that on my business card, but boy, it's a place I want to stand, but it's a grand statement. So, and the distinction is that I'm not a change agent in human activities,
right?
Like human doing, or but rather in human consciousness, and
which
so
of
this
course
metaphor
includes
of the
activities, but it includes activities in the context of consciousness.
Yeah, and the metaphor here of the mountain climber is not a random one. You know, when you're the expression of being so far in the forest that you can't see the trees. If you climb the mountain, you know, if you move up and you get above the tree line, you can then see a panorama that was not visible to you before. Your perspective on your world changes. And when you reach the top of a peak or of the mountain, you see a perspective that was not available to you before. You can see all the trees below, but you can see it in a very, very, very different context. So when we talk about being a change agent in human consciousness, we really are talking about it in terms of adult development and the process we go through as adults and that our clients go through to adopt more complex ways of seeing and relating to the world. That's a process really that's transformative, or, you know, that involves that kind of change. So that's part of where we stand. It's above and beyond just the behavior.
The other thing that's in this sentence that I love is the word human. One of the things that we realized about coactive coaches is that we coach humans. We work with, we coach, we lead, and we are act as change agents for human consciousness. Our work is with individuals and groups of people as coaches. It's not with invisible structures and systems necessarily. It can be, but that's not the work of a coactive coach. The work of a systems coach or something else. A coactive coach really is someone who engages in human, in the change agent of human consciousness. And who those humans are, what those humans are conscious of or not conscious of, is our job, is to open the paradigm up, open up a larger consciousness for those humans.
And
that's what we're about in organizations, not in organizations anywhere. We're about that,
yeah,
that
and
motion.
Something that's true, and again, it's true for lots of contexts, but in organizations specifically with organizational leaders, one of the things, there's, you know, one of the theorists around consciousness and human development that fascinates me, and I think it starts to inform our work more and more, is Robert Keegan.
Mm-hmm.
Many of you on the webinar, I'm sure, have heard of Robert Keegan. One of his main books is titled In Over Our Heads. It's a bit of a sort of dense, academic-y book, but it's nevertheless brilliant. And part of the whole premise here is that, and you can, if you think of your clients and organizations and their process of assuming higher and higher levels of responsibility, it begins to be really complex strategically for executive level leaders. It is, and you know what? They weren't trained to do that. Like, there was not a magic wand that said, poof, you're now ready to be an executive level leader. And what begins to happen is that the demands of that role begin to exceed the person's capacity actually to respond to them. And hence the title of the book, In Over Our Heads. He suggests that in many facets of life, not just work, not just leadership, not just organizations, but many facets of life, our capacity of human beings to process what we need to process and respond to the complexity around us, we are a bit in over our heads. And what's needed is an evolution to a more broad way of thinking about the world and about the demands on us as leaders. So when we're working with our... Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, when we're working with our client, you know, we're sort of taking them by the hand and helping them to become more conscious of the complexity that they're faced with and to become more able to respond in a powerful way. That's being a change agent in human consciousness in an organizational setting.
Well said, my friend.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Sometimes with those clients, I feel rather sort of humbled at really the opportunity that we have.
Great. Ooh.
Pretty.
This is the next piece of our paradigm shift or the stake or agenda that a coach holds. When a co-active coach looks over at their client or over at the group of people that they're leading, they are looking across the gap. They are looking at the transformational relationship with that person or that group. They want to see, they actually see what's on the other side of the change, not this side of the change. And their every action and every coaching, every listening, every word that's put forward into that relationship is pointing towards that leap, that transformative leap to the other side.
And a couple of distinctions we want to make here, and particularly in the context of organizations. One is a difference between, and again, transformative, just like human consciousness, it's sort of a grand word, and it's a word that can be overused and begin to get sort of watered down. But we mean it, we really mean it. We mean it in a specific way. And we mean, you know, a distinction here between change and learning that is transformative versus change or learning that is what we could call incremental, is sort of step by step. And in organizations and with many models of coaching and organization, the focus is really on, well, it's on problem fixing and it's on giving behavioral feedback. It's on, in a sense, advising, giving feedback, orchestrating a process of people improving step by step or incrementally their ability to perform a job or to perform a task or to become whatever, more assertive. And rather than that, our stance is that coactive coaches are committed to change that is transformative, that enables people to see their situation, their world, their organization, who they are, in a different way. It can include everything else, but fundamentally it's about discovering and becoming aware of capabilities that are different than we thought they may have been. I mean, imagine trying to train a caterpillar to fly.
Or even train a caterpillar in its butterfly nature. You know, even that it has wings.
How to become a buddy? You know, it's not gonna. Maybe we could do it, but boy, it's going to be a long, slow, frustrating process.
Instead, we need as coaches to see the butterfly in the caterpillar. We need to see the butterfly and commit to that transformation in that butterfly and in that caterpillar that will become butterfly. And we have to coach back. We have to coach. We have to see it without building. I can't build the muscle of the caterpillar to be a little bit better and a little bit better incrementally. I can't do that. And yet that's the way sort of coaching and management and everything in organizations is done. How do I grow this person step by step, you know, bit by bit from this weak place they are rather than have them envision and hold and grow into this butterfly that they are?
And, our stance, I think, with any of these is not that at times I'm not going to work with a client to improve step by step. There are times when that's very appropriate. But where I stand as a coactive coach and when I work with organizational leaders, what I'm committed to is creating transformative change.
Absolutely.
And along with that, really holding the very biggest possibility for my client.
I need to be able to, like I said with the butterflies, I need to be able to see on the other side of the chasm in front of my client of where they see their development or possibilities. I need to see the vista on the other side of that chasm for them and hold that for them and be able to help them build the bridge from that side of the chasm. They're going to do the building from their side of the chasm, and I need to help them and hold them to work on building the bridge from the other side.
And there is, you know, there's a concept I'm sure many are familiar with on the webinar out there of comes originally actually from Robert Fritz, who is the author of The Path of Least Resistance and other works on creativity. He's actually an artist who he does his work, I think, in Vermont here in New England. And he's one of the theorists whose work figures prominently in the Leadership Circle Profile, a 360 tool that CTI that we've partnered with and is now part of our approach. But a concept that comes from Robert Fritz is that of creative tension, of the tension that exists when the vision of what's possible in the most creative sense is clear and we can feel it in our gut and our client can feel it, and the grounding of awareness in current reality of how things are. And like a rubber band stretched from one to the other, it creates tension. It creates the impetus to move toward vision.
And only way we can create that tension is we need to know what's on the other side of the rubber band. We need to, that's a stake, that's our stand or our agenda, if you will, is what's on the other side of that rubber band pulling that tension. Right, Art? I mean, that's the biggest possibility we're holding. What's
absolutely
going to stretch that rubber band?
I'm noticing here just a couple of, I want to pause for a moment, Henry. I'm noticing some questions that are pertaining right to where we are right now. And so I wanted to respond to those. One was, just to repeat here, the name of Robert Fritz's book. Again, his name is Robert Fritz, and that's Fritz. And the name of his book that I referred to is The Path of Least Resistance. And it's terrific. It's not a new book. It's been around for quite a while.
The other one you recommended was Robert Keegan.
Yeah, well, and with Robert Keegan, actually, the book I'll recommend is Immunity to Change. Immunity to Change. And if we talk about being, you know, coaches committed to transformation and to shifts in human consciousness, the book Immunity to Change is a terrific resource. His work and Fritz's work, again, they form part of the foundation of this tool that we are using called the Leadership Circle. So I just wanted to pause to respond to that before we move on here. All right. All right. Henry, I'm going to move us forward.
Next slide.
You bet.
Oh, yes, that one.
To engaging your whole client.
Don't you love that picture? The picture of two people walking along, and I happen to know that one of them is a coach and one of them is a client. That is a coaching session that you're seeing right in front of you there.
Yeah, now I would pose the question to everybody out there. When you think of the coaching sessions that you have with organizational clients, with organizational leaders, the feeling that's created, the relationship that's created, how similar is it to what you see in this picture? And my bet is that it's not too similar. As I know many times, now sometimes my sessions are over the phone. More often in organizations, they are, more often than when they're not in organizations, they happen in person. And there is this is part of the pull of the, at least for me personally, the saboteur. I sometimes forget or get reluctant or scared, to be honest, to really engage my whole client.
And I think this is one of the biggest traps in organizational coaching and work in organizations, is that there's such a powerful paradigm that says, I don't bring my whole self to work. I only bring my work self to work. And there's something that when you're coaching someone, when you're working with someone holistically, or when anyone in a corporation or organization is working for someone holistically, there is a whole person there, and there's a person that has what I call the four minds, which is the heart or the emotional mind, the brain or the brain mind, the spirit or the spiritual mind, and the body or the physical mind, and that's what creates a whole person. And if the coach is only able to work with the brain mind, which is sort of the only mind we're allowed to take to work, along with academia and all the other places that we can bring that brain mind, and we've been given permission to bring that brain mind, and then ignores the other three minds, that transformation cannot occur that we were talking about in the previous slides. It just can't. You have to be able to focus on this, on all the minds of that client, all the parts of that client.
And there's a bit of irony I find in this, because while on one hand, I know sometimes I get if I fall prey to my worries and my fears and all of that, if I shift into sort of a reactive way of being, and I'm wanting to prove myself to my client, or I am whatever, I'll sort of forget this. So sometimes I feel a pressure to move away from this a little bit. The irony is that in organizations, all too much, like on the scale of things, the way things work in general, and as I say this, everyone, I recognize this is not true of all organizations. There are degrees of this. But if you allow me to just sort of overgeneralize for a moment, the corporate environments tend to not focus on holistic approaches for developing the workforce or developing employees, or it's very much an environment where rationality and logic is prioritized, where it is really valued. And so part of that, in my experience, creates actually environments where people are starving to be interacted with and seen and responded to as whole human beings. It's a little bit like, there's a lack of water in the desert. And so I find that when I'm able to establish a coaching relationship that really has a powerful alliance, I'm able to engage my clients my whole client in a way that just feeds them, in a way that they feel seen and become more able to express themselves than they normally do. And sure, and again, we're not the only game in town that talks about interacting with the whole person, but we're one of the few, and I would say that we're one of the best, if I do say so myself. And, we We claim this as part of who we are and how we operate. We operate with our clients in a way that is holistic.
And to the transformative change, the leaps in the leaps over the chasm, or the going from the caterpillar to the butterfly, can only happen, is what my declaration is, if we focus on holistically. It can't happen if we only focus on part,
mm-hmm.
part of the person.
Right. Right. Great. Good. Henry, I'm going to move us forward to our next slide here. One sec.
I'm getting excited to see what the next
one is. There we go.
Yes.
And
a couple of keys.
So we've been talking about the coach's agenda, and we've been suggesting that the coach has a powerful agenda. And we've been talking about elements of that, that it's about being a change agent in human consciousness, and it's being committed to transformation and to interacting with your client holistically. And for sure, there are pressures that pull us away from that. So what do we think are some keys, some things that are important in being able to maintain that?
Well, and the other thing that is true for these things, which will be familiar to people, is that we need to be talking more about who the coach is, like, really, as opposed to an invisible being that is supporting something happening over there with the client. There is this person that is the coach or the leader that has to be solid and have this agenda. And in order to be solid and have this agenda, these are some of the key things that we feel needs to be in that coach, in you, when you're coaching in organizations or anywhere else.
Yeah. And so, you know, one here is to stand firmly in the model. And just to share some personal experience with this, for many years now, I've been running coactive coaching courses in corporate environments, in several versions of them. You know, the version that I imagine most of the people on this webinar attended, the fundamentals of coactive coaching course, as well as other designs that we offer that are not so much aimed at coaches in organizations, but rather leaders. And in the first couple of years that I did that, I realize I'm saying this here with my, like, my bosses on the line, sort of true confessions, but I would get
Okay, Art, you're forgiven in advance.
Yeah, okay. I would get I don't know if shy is the word. I would start to feel a bit insecure about this sort of perception of our model, the coactive coaching model. That's what we mean when we say stand firm in the model, that if people view it as too touchy-feely or too soft or something like that, too new agey, or I don't know what. I would get a little bit I would feel insecure about it. And in my design role with CTI, this is going back to the beginning, I would sort of grapple around for ways we could change the design to make it sound tougher or something, or to put more, I don't know, you know, put more meat on the bones or something like that. And I realized that somewhere along the way, what a mistake that was, that actually what is so needed is exactly what our model is. And instead of shying away from it, I started to actually stand in it firmly. There was an instance in a particular organization where it was not our moment of highest achievement, where the clients at a very high level in the organization actually made a request that we remove the emotional intelligence from our course. That was literally the request.
You didn't
and
tell
I
me
remember,
this.
I think it was a defining moment for me where I said, you know, of course, this is our work. This is why it matters here. This is why it makes such a difference in your organization. And I realized that actually to stand firmly in the model is what really, really is needed. And it doesn't mean don't be credible. It doesn't mean don't speak the language of your clients. You know,
it doesn't mean be invisible.
It doesn't mean be invisible. You know, no matter who I'm working with, if I'm working with a homeless population, or whatever population I'm working with, I need to be able to meet them where they are and speak their language and be credible, whatever that is. Just, and it's no different if that's an executive audience in an organization, or it is a homeless audience on the streets.
Yep.
Whatever it is, I need to meet my clients where they are.
That leads us to actually the next bullet point, which I think is, in order to be able to meet those clients where they are, I need to be able to know what my reactive place is, who my saboteurs are, what my limiting beliefs are. I need to know what it is that's going to get in the way of me being present. And that's a constant piece of work for me. I am always looking into that, what I call my basement, and digging through my basement, looking for what it is that's going to come up and bite me and catch me and take me off the model, take me away from being present with this other person and with who they are going to transform into.
Absolutely.
If I don't do that work constantly, I mean always, I get surprised. Those saboteurs pop up and take over, and I think I know what I'm doing, and I don't.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I know there's a particular flavor of saboteurs that are familiar to me when I'm working in organizations because of, my desire to look competent or to not put my contract at risk or whatever, and I become less powerful.
Yes.
But the more I'm aware of my own, those pitfalls, the more I can create strategies to recover. And
yep.
So it's key. Now, one I want to add to this list that should be on here is the Designed Alliance, because there's a key in starting up, especially starting up, but throughout the relationship with organizational clients, about really what is this coaching about? What's my role here with you as coach? How am I going to operate with you? What does it mean to interact with, engage with all parts of you, my client? So some of these things we've been talking about become part of the conversation. I would use different language, but part of the same part of the conversation in how we design our alliance.
Yep. The next one, the third point on here, Art, is the part that I think is the real paradigm shifter, and it's the most. It's the thing we pull from our leadership program, really powerfully, our coactive leadership program, and that is that we say that not only leaders have a clear stake in the ground that is their orientation point towards where they want to take the people they're leading, but coaches too have that same clear stake with their clients. And we've been talking about that in previous slides, but there's a sense of after I design that alliance and get on that model and get my saboteurs out of the way, who I am and what I'm holding for that client is solid. It's a stake in the ground that I say we are going to make so together, And I feel it so deeply that I can orient towards it no matter what the circumstances are around me, that I can orient towards that stake with that client at any given moment.
And, when that's present in a conversation, and bigger than that, the relationship I have with the client feels it.
Absolutely.
It makes a palpable difference.
I used to say in the early days of my coaching that I'm more committed to my clients' commitments than they are. And they could feel that. They would be slipping and sliding around, and I'd say, this is where you're going, and you know it. What needs to happen to get there?
Right. And we'd say also to come from a creative rather than a reactive stance. Now, this is language also that comes a bit from this leadership circle profile process. But basically, another way to talk about it, which we talk about in that same workshop, is the difference between playing to win versus playing not to lose. It's another way to think of it. As a coach, times if I am sort of falling prey to my own saboteurs, I start to play to not lose, meaning I start to coach and come from a place that is seeking the approval or something of my client, or I don't want to lose my contract, or I don't want whatever, I'm trying to avoid something, rather than the passion I feel for what I want myself as coach, I get to want something, and what I want really from my client. That comes from an internal place of creativity, of vision, of purpose. And we all know, if each of you on the line here checks in your experience, you know the difference between when you fall into a reactive mode versus when you're coming from a creative place.
Absolutely.
You know, and all of that, I think all of this entails being willing to risk failure, you know, being willing to go out on a limb a bit for the clients that you have.
Even in places where it looks like you can't, or especially in places where it looks like you can't risk failure, you know, that's the place that we talk about a lot in the curriculum, I know. And, it, you know, it just can't be stressed enough that failure actually isn't being a failure. Failure is the opportunity to course correct. And it's the only way you can navigate towards the other side of that chasm is you're going to need to course correct your way across to it. And that means you're going to have little failures all the way across to the other side. And you need to accept those little failures. Otherwise, you're stuck, basically, in the process
Great.
Of the work.
So with this, we want all of you to imagine a bit what the implications of this are for you. And for all of those of you who have been practicing coactive coaches for some time, in terms of being these things and of standing in this place, how has that been for you, I wonder? And if you imagine really turning the volume up on being a change agent of human consciousness in your settings and of holding to your commitment to create transformation.
Really imagine the impact on your clients of no holds barred, having a no holds barred stake that they are clear that you hold for them of transformative change. Imagine that. Imagine that sort of that more solid core in you than even you thought you had for each of your clients.
And there, I think, you know, what we're doing here, I'm sort of realizing, I think what we're wanting, Henry, is there's a bit of a, we're wanting to create a bit of a reverberation out there amongst us coactive coaches in organizations and to, you know, we want this conversation to keep going. I mean, we want the imagining to really begin.
Well, imagining is how you create a paradigm shift. Imagining is how you create your universe. And so by that imagination, by that thinking, by talking about it, by growing in it, is how we really start to make the shift powerfully
mm-hmm.
into what we want to create.
And I want to turn now to some, I know some people have been writing in questions, and we have the wizard behind the curtain who's been looking at some of those. And so want to respond to some of the questions that are out there about things we've been talking about. So I see one here. Oh, gosh, there are lots of good ones out here. From Raymond, the question is, how do you define the difference between change and transformation? That's a great question, and I think the way that we're defining that, I would say, well, here's what I think about that, and Henry, you chime in.
Absolutely.
Transformation includes change. I would say it's sort of, there are various types of change, and there's change that is transformative, and there's change that is less so. So when I refer to change that is transformative, it is not merely just changing what I do or what someone is doing or what someone knows, but it's a change actually in how they how they do what they do or how they know what they know. It's a change, really, in how one sees the world, a change in the underlying assumptions, beliefs, all of those things underneath. It's sort of like they're invisible, the beliefs, assumptions, judgments that fuel our emotions, out of which come our actions. When we shift that foundation, that's transformative change.
Well, and you wrote your thesis, your PhD thesis on the aha moment, did you not, Art?
Well, that was part of it.
Part of it?
Part of it,
yeah. Like on that aha, that serious light bulb event going off where all of a sudden the world is different. And I think part of what we're leading towards with coaching or leadership is how do we create more of those in our ongoing relationships with people so that they actually have caterpillar to butterfly transformative change, as opposed to incremental change that happens in a sort of, which is not bad, but it happens more in a building from something instead of from this side of the caterpillar side, building from it rather
right.
than building from the butterfly side.
And I think a simple distinction, and it's one we make in the classroom, is we show the image of the teeter-totter with being on one side and doing on the other side. And this isn't, I don't think, the whole answer, but part of it is when I'm working with a client and I'm really focused on transformative change, I'm focused on who the client is and how they relate to their world, how they show up, versus looking at how they are behaving and how they might behave differently. And it's not that one is necessarily good or one is bad. It's just they're different, I think, perspectives.
There's a couple of questions that are coming out, Art. Can I change the question?
Sure can. Go ahead,
Henry. A couple of questions here that are coming out that are about the distinction between having an agenda and a judgment, or, you know, the things that we worked on getting out of the picture in the fundamentals course in the first three balance process, fulfillment, balance, and process. And what's the distinction between having an agenda and coming from judgment, opinions,
yeah.
and ego?
It's great. And how, you know, like, so how do we know when we're in the midst of our process with our client? And how do we know if where we're coming from is actually a place of opinion and judgment about something versus holding a powerful agenda?
And I think one of the things that we spend so much time getting rid of those things in the core curriculum is because that's our default. We come from our opinions and judgments all the time. They're not bad. It's just that's where we come from. So it prohibits us from being able to see or be with the other person or listen to them deeply. So what we're working on doing with coaches is how do we get you to listen deeply and be able to be over there without whatever's going on in your head getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And once that listening happens, yeah. then that stuff that's going on in your head can't be useful, especially when it's powerfully driven by a stake or a powerful big A agenda that you're holding for that client. You know, then those intuitions and those opinions
mm-hmm.
and those things that are coming in from that orientation point can be remarkably powerful for your client.
That's great. Here's another question. This one's coming from Samantha. Thanks, Samantha. And the question is, when your client is the organization, is there a stake within the organization or the client or both? Like how does that play out? And so that's the question. And let me see here. So I'm thinking here, when your client is the organization, is there a stake within the organization or the client or both? And I guess I hate to, you know, fall back to the answer, it depends, but I guess it depends. I think, though, that for me, when I think of my own practice with organizational leaders and their organizations as my client, there often are times when my sense of the stake I'm holding is for both. So the answer frequently, yeah, but here's where it's going to, my answer is frequently, and then my answer is it depends. So the frequently is I can simultaneously know that I'm going for, you know, for transformation and the achievement of a vision and a creative stance at an organizational level that includes individuals, and that in that process, one-on-one, I'm holding a powerful agenda and a stake for the individual client.
Well, I think another thing I want to add, I'm sorry, were you done, Art?
No, yeah, go ahead, Henry.
I think because the next question comes up that's similar to, like, what's that? Loretta asked, could you give an example of a clear stake that is deeply felt? I think the clear stake that I'm offering to coaches, that we want to offer to coaches in organizations or elsewhere, that will actually, I think, help with Samantha's question, is that my stake is to be a transformative change agent for human consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That I, who I am is a trans, who I am walking into any corporate organization, any individual appointment, is a, I am a transformative change agent for human consciousness. And I am going, by transforming that human's consciousness, most likely I'm going to transform that organization's consciousness.
That's,
you know,
great.
And the more work I do in being a change agent, a transformative change agent for human consciousness, the more powerful the individual will be that I'm working with, and the systems,
yeah,
and organizations that individual touches.
Here, I want to respond to another question here from Loretta, and I love this question. Could you give a couple of examples of a clear stake that is deeply felt? That's great. And I just, you know, quickly, I'm currently working with a president of a pretty large company as a client, and so with this particular client, the client has become quite aware of really two different ways of operating and making decisions. One of them is quite reactive. It's based on past history. It's based on, you know, getting lots of recognition and pleasing others. And at other times, there's another way where it comes from conviction from inside. And the client is very clear on the difference. I have a stake I hold for this client, which is to do anything I can that will support this client in becoming more conscious of that distinction and of choosing powerfully. The choice is still the client's, but I am a stand for this client choosing in the direction that is of growth of this person's consciousness. And I feel it in my gut. I want it for this person. And if I feel myself backing away from it in our coaching, I need to kick myself in the butt. I recognize it, and I know I need to kick myself in the butt. So for me, that's one example. Henry, do you have an example?
Well, the one I gave already was one of my examples about being clear that who I am in the matter and how I orient in the matter is as a transformative change agent for human consciousness. And that is my stake as a coactive coach in the world, and it, with everybody. Now, there might be a stake that I form for that individual that is more specific in the frame of that stake. You know, like there may be a certain transformation energy, a certain change that is very clear that client wants to create in their life, or that I see them wanting to create in their life, and that we talk about creating in their life, that then I hold that a clearer version of that stake around a change, being a change agent in human consciousness. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know that then I hope, like, for instance, there might be someone who is absolutely got in that I see very clearly is going to open up a whole new way of thinking or looking and operating within the organization they're working in, and that they already see that for themselves somewhat, and I see that for them, yet they're not in a position to do that yet. There's a gap between who they are and what they're doing, and I'm orienting towards that thing, that place that we see that person getting to as a stake. That's my orientation point, which is part of what the definition for the next one of the questions is coming in. What do we mean by stake? And it really, to me, is that big A agenda, that orientation of me, the coach. How am I oriented towards that transformative change? What am I putting in my frame that will give me a clear orientation towards where the possibilities that I'm holding for that client? Is that helpful, Art?
Yeah, I think that it is. And There's another question here from Marilyn about what do you do when your clients balk at your vision for them? That's an interesting question, and because partly I would say, well, and here's where there's sort of this contradiction in our whole message here of hold the client's agenda, and the coach has a powerful agenda, and yet they stand solidly side by side, because I do not want to impose my vision on my client. So if the client is balking at my vision for them, I wonder if I'm sort of pushing my vision on them. I don't want to do that. I do, however, have a, we could call it a stake. I do have, as this is related to the agenda that I hold, is that my client will lead out of a place of vision.
Absolutely.
And that's sort of the difference. And that's where I'm holding a powerful agenda, and part of that is that my client really discovers his or her powerful agenda.
Yeah, it's like you don't do the work for your client, you don't do the doing for your client. You do you hold. The orientation is I hold that vision,
mm-hmm.
that stake for the client, that agenda for the client. I am not doing the doing for them. I'm not telling
right.
them what it is. Like, I'm holding it, not telling them.
And
they've
we've got this is, I
think,
going to be
the butterfly. I can't make the butterfly out of the caterpillar. All I can do is know that butterfly is going to happen and hold that.
Right. And here, as a final question to respond to before we close, from Richard, the question is, where do organizational expectations fit into the keys of a powerful coach's agenda? And don't they need to be reconciled? And it relates to some other questions and points to me to the importance of the designed alliance and a designed alliance with – because here's the thing. I want to work with clients, organizations and leaders, individuals who want to be up to this. I want clients who are up to this. That's the kind of work I want to be doing.
Right.
And so – if a client is not up to that or doesn't want that, maybe I'm not the coach for them. You know, they may be better served by something different. So if the organization is not up to enabling change to happen, then, you know, I would say to some degree they do need to be reconciled. And that's part of designing the alliance.
You know, there's a word I always put in front of designed alliance art that is called I create a consciously designed alliance. In other words, it's a designed alliance of consciousness, too. So it's not just a list of to-dos for each other. It's actually a consciously created alliance that is aligns our consciousnesses. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, that's great. I moved the slide here. Just I want folks to know about the Coactive Network conversation that we're setting up to go along with this series. And so you see here the URL. It's on the Coactive Network. It's coactivenetwork.com/transform. So we're going to be on this conversation. We want to invite all of you to be on this conversation with us, and we want to continue batting around the questions and the conversations and to keep looking in this direction. As we said when we started, we really want this to be the launch of a conversation with you out there in the Coactive community, with us. And, you know, the relationship that we have matters a lot. And we want our collective understanding of who we are out there in the world and in organizations specifically to evolve together. So we invite you to that conversation to have it evolve.
And we want the 360 or so people who are on this call from all over the world to stay in the conversation, to grow it, keep asking questions, keep holding a stake and doing powerful coaching in the world. Thank you very much for being with us, and thank you for being a coach.
And you're going to, all of you on the line, you'll be receiving an email with the URL, with the recording of this presentation and the slides within the next day or two. I think it'll be in the next 24 hours. And so with that, I want to echo what Henry just said. I want to thank you all for joining us. It's been, for me, just a real pleasure to be with you and doing this with Henry today, and look forward to interacting with you online. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Hi.